Okay, we continue with post-implementation.
Yes.
We are continue with post-employment benefits. I give the floor to Akemi.
Go, yeah.
Now you
wait a minute.
Sorry.
May I open it again?
Oh, hang on. Oh, yeah, you have to continue.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, no, he's still blinking.
Yeah. Yeah, take this one.
Thank you. The purpose of this session is to provide a project update about the research project on post-employment benefits. We think that we need to consider the result of the ongoing agenda consultation before we make a recommendation to the ISV on what the ISV should do next for this research project. Consequently, we are not asking for any decisions in this meeting. In the meantime, we will continue our internal analysis and information gathering. We will then consider the future result of the agenda consultation and the discussions in other ISV projects to suggest to the ISV on what the ISV should do next, for example, to develop a research paper or a discussion paper or something else. As discussed at the September 2014 ISV meeting, the current IS-19 does not always provide relevant information when the pension risk does not fall solely on an entity or solely on employees. For example, when the benefits depend on the actual return on plan assets, but the entity also guarantees a minimum return. This is because the present value of the defined benefit obligation does not fully reflect the effect of the risks, whereas plan assets are measured at their fair value, which fully reflect the effect of the risks. We think that this problem may mislead users of financial statements. This problem has also resulted in diversity in practice, as the Interpretations Committee has observed. Our staff papers presented include information about global trends in pensions in paper 15A and an indication of possible models that might address the issue of hybrid plans in paper 15B, and the information about potential impact of the ongoing agenda consultation and other ISB projects, for example, conceptual framework project and the insurance project. It is described in paper C. Do you have any questions or comments on this research project and the papers?
Madam?
Thank you, Kevin. I think it's an excellent description of the challenge that we face with regards to this particular issue. As you mentioned, this is a description of the research where we are. I think it's very wise, your perception and recommendation for us to wait for the agenda consultation, because of course, as the summarizing research demonstrated that this particular area, the changes are very significant all over the world. And for us to proceed, my perception, initial perception, is that this will require a review of IS-19 at some point. And to do that, we will need, of course, to gather more information, more complete information, consider the population jurisdictions that do adopt IFRS nowadays. And of course, this is consider what you're showing us and the types of questions that are being sent to the interpretation committee. It appears to be quite outdated for a growing number of schemes. So I generally agree with the direction proposed. I think further research could only be done, should only be done after we hear from the agenda consultation. but we, I personally think there is a clear problem nowadays in this camp.
Thank you.
Pat.
Kimi, I like the papers. There are a few statements in the papers that I was puzzled by. Just as an example, paragraph 18 of paper 15B, people asserting that trying to apply a fair value model to pension obligation would essentially be too complex. On the other hand, a customized fulfillment value model, you know, wouldn't be, and the two are really not a whole lot different in my mind, except for a couple of assumptions, generally speaking. My hope, and I think you need to probably work closely with Joan Brown, who's doing research on liabilities, but my hope, my dream...
You have a dream?
Yes, I have a dream. Similar to Mr. Sir David, okay, who said who wanted to... you know, fly on an airplane whose airplane actually sat on its balance sheet. My dream, okay, is that liabilities that are associated with asset liability management businesses, banks, insurance companies, endowment funds, pension plans, are all measured someday at fair value. Okay, that's my dream. And so I think ultimately, whether or not we go with fair value or fulfillment value, I think is a question of evolution. But I think the work we're doing in the insurance project, I think, greatly informs us here about the nature of these obligations. I think you can find actuaries who would be able to put values on things like demographic data that you talk about in here, the hard to value assumptions. And I think that could be done. So that's what I would encourage you to do, is to pursue this in the context of an asset liability management paradigm, as opposed to just valuing liabilities, which I think is really more where Joan is. And in those businesses, what is the most relevant thing? Because we setting out a standard dealing with financial instruments, and we kind of did that, I won't say completely in a silo, but kind of in a silo. And we said, we'll deal with the accounting for insurance contract liabilities down the road. This is a priority. We have to deal with this, get this done, okay? And at the end of the day, the reality is these businesses are a business of managing cash flows, assets and liabilities, inflows and outflows. You just can't look at them too independently. I think you need to look at them, okay, as a group. Whether it's a unit of account is another question, but I really think that you have to have the same measurement attribute too. Okay, you can't have a mixed measurement for assets and a fulfillment value for liabilities. I don't think that provides the most decision useful information. I think the two measurement attributes in AL management businesses should be identical. So it should be all pure cost, or it should be all pure fair value. That's kind of where I am. In an ideal world. That's not where we are today. That's not where we're probably going to be in 10 or 15 years. But I have a dream.
Mary?
Echo a couple of things that Amaro said. First of all, I think it's a very good capture of the number of issues, putting data about the prevalence of this issue with a review of some of the possible accounting alternatives. And it really does bring home for me, as I think it did for Amaro, that making any decision about what we do here would be a significant agenda decision for us. I mean, I think it's helpful to be reminded of what the interpretation committee has tried to do. I think there's a difference between what can be done interpretively within the context of existing standards versus what the board can do. But I also share Amaro's concern that we are kidding ourselves if we think we can do something surgical, that this, it may be that existing 19 works reasonably well for defined benefit plans, but I don't think we can just, go in and do one piece for this type of plan, that we would have to consider it in the context of IS-19 and how it all fits together. And as I said, I think that would be a significant agenda decision. A couple of things that I wanted to ask or comment about in terms of the specifics of the paper. One, I agree with your point, and I think we should shout it loud and clear, that if we were to do anything in this area, we should wait until we have finalized insurance, because that will give us a liability measurement model. I'm not sure that we would want to pick it up, but I think that that's one of the first things we'd want to consider about, you know, the relevance of that. So to start work on this before we have finished insurance seems to me inefficient. The second thing that I wanted to ask about is, you had said, I'm trying to find the paragraph reference, that I think it's paper 15B, you expressed concerns about accounting, and paragraph 35, accounting arbitrage opportunities with the separation of bifurcation of the guarantee and accounting for the guarantee separately. I think I may not understand well enough what the risk of this may be, because when I go through the paper, this to me seemed like a fruitful area to explore. If we were to make an agenda decision to do this, I don't think we should start fiddling with it in advance. And so I'd like information about there. And then the other comment that I'll offer before you come back to me on that is, I have some concerns about the capped ultimate cost adjustment model. To me, while we can point to things from a conceptual basis that might seem to be similar thinking, it's basically saying plug the rate of return to avoid an accounting mismatch, and I think we're kidding ourselves, we're dressing it up if we say more. So while this gives mechanically a useful outcome, I think we are overselling its conceptual merit. And I wanted to offer that as an observation. It's really paragraph 35 on what the arbitrage risks are that I'd like to hear your views on, so that we capture them and remember them when we come back to make an agenda decision.
May I quickly try to respond to your question about the bifurcation model? It was explained in the 2008 discussion paper. It explains that the bifurcation model approach could lead to the same economic obligations being accounted for differently. For example, two economically identical promises can be described differently. For example, one promised lump sum of TU 1000 plus a fixed return. One lump sum of TU 1000 plus a fixed return of 6% per year paid in 5 years. This is one description, but this promise could be described differently. For example, a promise to lump sum of CU 1,340 in 5 years, and plus a fixed return of 0%. So this could be described in arbitrary ways. So that's why the ISB did not try to use this approach. And
okay, so that's what you identify as the derivative that you split out. That's where you see the okay.
Yeah, and it explains that the feature of the embedded options or guarantees could be interrelated and complex. So this approach could be complex and arbitrary.
Okay, I think it would be helpful in terms of a recap to the example, but it's also bringing out the idea that the challenge here is identifying what you split out, and that we'd have to the same way that you explained well the consequences of having to have good scoping if we were trying to do a focused answer. I think explaining that if we were to pursue the bifurcation approach, that would be the critical challenge, is how you get consistent identification of what you're splitting out. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Stephen.
So I like the work you've done on this, and I'm glad that we're finally making some headway on this. You mentioned in the very first paper that we need to consider the results of the ongoing agenda consultation. I'm not sure we do, because we've known this is a problem for a long while. and it's a significant problem in certain jurisdictions. So the thought of us not doing it because somehow in the voting on the agenda consultation it comes lower down on the list doesn't appeal to me. Mary said about this capped, adjusted 19 cap thingamajig. It's clearly not conceptual, but I do think it has potential to provide a short-term fix to deal with some of the issues. However, the problem with it, as you acknowledge, is that it doesn't deal with the higher of plans and the optionality that's in there. I would encourage you to consider changing it slightly onto a stochastic basis instead of doing it on a best estimate basis, because then I think you would be able to capture the optionality and it could provide that short-term fix. It wouldn't be conceptual, and it doesn't resolve what I think are the wider problems of defined benefit plan accounting. But I recognize that getting to a single, more conceptually sound model is going to be a real challenge. So even if we do have the insurance model out there, and in this regard, I think the insurance model is pretty settled, the fulfillment value, you know, we're arguing about lots of things, but we're not really arguing about that aspect. But applying the fulfillment value model to pensions isn't going to be simple. So I think that's a much more long-term project. And if we want to do something short-term, then addressing the plans in the context of DB accounting with the type of modification that you're suggesting, I think, is a potential way forward.
Charles? Thank you. Yep, this is a really very good paper. In a very short time, you analyzed all kind of aspects of this pension. However, let's see the paper 15C and paragraph 15B. They are comparing with the insurance companies and some general companies. As Steve just suggested, if we introduce insurance model, it might be very costly for general manufacturing companies. So I would like to suggest some cost-benefit analysis of these alternatives. In the case of insurance companies, they do have all actuaries, they do have all kinds of infrastructure to calculate these amounts. And banks have some good experts in-house, so they can easily apply all kinds of fair value model in their financial instruments. But in the case of general companies, I don't think they might be easy to implement some very advanced measurement model. So I think we need a very careful analysis of costs of the all kinds of models you suggest.
Chung, we just come back on that. I mean, it is true that many companies won't have the expertise to do that sort of thing in-house, but for pension valuations, they're almost certainly already going to actuaries, external actuarial consultants, anyway. So they'll just do the same. The actuaries are the ones who'll have the different sorts of calculations to do.
Yes, I understand. But generally, our trend or tendency of our IFRSs are getting costly and costly for all kinds of companies to make some information. I don't know whether how that relevant information is deserved such a big cost of the money. But generally, we are dealing with all kinds of fair value models, all kinds of very precise measurement, now recognizing all kinds of issues, making all kinds of disclosures. But I understand that's a very general tendency. But this kind of case in a pension, that covers all kinds of companies, not just very advanced insurance companies and banking companies. That's what I'm saying. If there is some kind of incremental cost burdens, if we introduce a new concept, new model, then we need to pay good attention to those kind of costs of the incremental costs of those companies. That will be maybe our more better way for our IFRS to be accepted by many companies.
Peter?
I wanted to comment on the capped ultimate costs approach, because I don't think it's as unconceptual as Mary and to some extent Steve painted it. When you're trying to value a set of uncertain cash flows, there are basically two ways you can do it. You can either take the actual cash flows and discount them back at a risk-adjusted discount rate, or you can take adjusted cash flows and discount them back at a risk-free rate. So let's say you had a set of cash flows with an expected return of 108 in a year, and the discount rate for that would normally be 8%. You can either discount the 108 back at 8 to get to 100, or you can take a sort of adjusted return of 105 and discount it back at a risk-free rate of 5. Now, the problem we've got with pensions is we've got this strange discount rate in there. We don't really know exactly what it is or why it's there or whether we want to keep it in the long term. So if we didn't have that problem, we could deal with one of the problems relatively easily, which is the mismatch between the projected returns and the discount rate, by either adjusting the projected returns or by using a different discount rate. Adjusting the discount rate is difficult when we don't know what the actual discount rate we want to use is. So what the ultimate cost approach is saying is that at least we can solve part of the problem by making sure that we don't bring in expected returns that exceed the discount rate we're going to use. We don't know if that's exactly the right discount rate, but we don't want to adjust all the way back to the risk-free rate because we don't know whether that's where we want to go in the long term. So there's a kind of conceptual justification for it. It's obviously, it's pretty rough around the edges, and it won't deal with the higher of problem either, but it will deal to some extent with the mismatch between the projected returns and the discount rate.
Have you looked at the UK paper that was done about 2007, 2009? It addressed quite a few of those questions. It actually came back to a risk-free rate. It said all the risks were taken up in the cash flows. Doug?
Thank you. First, I would like to congratulate Akemi finalizing such a nice report. And this report shows the big success of accounting. When I was a junior accountant nearly 30 years ago, I came across FASB 87, and I was very much shocked. And it was completely different from what I learned. And
what were you shocked by?
Shocked with the way of thinking of FASB 87, which is pension accounting. And in my previous life at that time, the accounting is to make sure the actual data should be based on the actual data. But this one should be based on not actual, but the actuarial data. So that was quite shocked. So it's a forecasting data element, and it was completely different from what I thought. But after 30 years has passed, so Akemi's paper shows that there is a dramatic change in the pension scheme program. There is a dramatic shift from DB to DC. So accounting standard wouldn't change the behavior of entities, but the accounting standard could provide good transparency, and the good transparency of the risk of the post-employment benefit. So that made such a dramatic change. So therefore, I think your paper shows big success of accounting. And having said that, so what should we do now? And there are big shift from DB to DC. How shall we cope with it? I think there might be some pressing needs for this change. So we may need to make some quick fix. But if you think about the impact of accounting, I think we should stay on the conceptual basis. We should stick to conceptual fairness. So you have to think about what is the right model rather than making lots of quick fixes. So in this sense, I echo with the Pat's dream. So we would like to join his dream.
Gary?
I don't dream about accounting, but I do think about it a lot. But by the way, Kimmy, I thought very good paper, and I think whether or not we wait for the gender consultation or not, I think we'll decide that a little bit down the line. I mean, I could, certainly a well-known problem for a long time. No, I think in that sense, we don't need agenda consultation to tell us what to do. We know it's a problem. The question is prioritization of workload balancing. My former life, actually, I ran all these programs, and the biggest one was a hybrid plan, cash balance. I would tell you, going back, I can assure you the cash balance, these hybrid plans do not fit well in the DB model, whether it's the FASB's version or ours. So I think if we're going to proceed forward on this thing, and just talk in the context that we are, is I think we're looking at a third model. I think the DC model today is generally okay. The DB model might not be what anybody would do today, but classic DB plans, I mean, they're in long-term secular decline. I mean, no one's opening new ones. If they're not frozen, they're probably closed to new participants. So that would say every single day they're slightly less relevant than they were the day before. They had a long life to go, but they are going away. So I think if we want to have a project that does not last 10 years, I think reopening DB accounting gives us a much greater chance of keeping this going a lot longer than perhaps it needs to be. Because again, I don't think DB, like I said, it's imperfect, and these plans don't fit it. I think we should be thinking of a third model, and I really do not draw the analogies to the insurance project, and I can buy into Patrick's asset liability type approach, and I think that's where we should be thinking in those terms of just create a brand new model, because these are a brand new plan designed to, you know, basically pick the best of both existing models, if you will, or business strategies, but it's a third thing.
Any other comments? Well, Akemi, thank you for this work, very important, and I concur with those who said that we highly probable we need to do something here, because it is a big problem. The companies that are affected by it are affected in a big way. So, of course, we agenda consultation is going on, so we'll take that on board, but we'll have to take a good decision here. This is your last meeting?
Yes, for the ISB public session.
For the ISB public session, okay. Well, so this is a good moment. Thank you for your work. I think you can feel very pleased that you leave us and go back to Japan having finished these important papers. So we thank you very much for your efforts and wish you all the best back in Japan.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so what shall we do? We are a bit ahead of schedule. Let's have a break and then a break till 11:15.
I sort of get into this. I was like,